from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. We've got an hour to talk about some of the things that matter most. And joining me today, Dr. Jay Budziszewski. He's the author of a number of books, including What We Can't Not Know. And what we're going to be doing in today's broadcast is taking a look at those things which many modern men and women claim they don't know. Sometimes these things are called the natural law. We're talking about basic insights, like to be truthful, the understanding that in some way we are designed, that we act with purpose. So Dr. Budziszewski joins us. He's the author of Written on the Heart, The Case for Natural Law. Again, I mentioned What We Can't Not Know, his offer of The Revenge of Conscience. And we're going to take the time today to try to, look afresh on what maybe for many of us would seem to be common sense, but has certainly been lost in the culture surrounding us. So here's the phone number, 1-877-573-7825. That's 1-877-573-7825. Keep the number nearby because we're going to be taking your calls throughout the hour. But first, to the news headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you, Alan. A very good afternoon. This is your Ave Maria Radio News on Thursday, February 28th. It's the feast of St. Romanus and St. Lupicinus. Four children have been killed in the latest rounds of Israeli airstrikes. A total of 15 Palestinians have died in the last day alone. Sierra Millman reports from Beirut.
Israel says the increasing airstrikes are targeting rocket launch cells, but Palestinian civilians are frequently killed or wounded by them. The militant group Hamas sent rockets raining down on northern Israel Wednesday after the first Israeli airstrike of the day killed five militants traveling in a van. One of those rockets caused the death of an Israeli adult student, the first fatality from Palestinian rocket fire in 9 months. In that same period, more than 200 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli military. This latest bout of violence comes at a time when some Arab states and the Palestinian Authority have spoken with increasing pessimism about ongoing peace talks and the two-state solution itself. Sierra Millman, Beirut.
John McCain's likely Republican nomination for president has revived a debate about a phrase in the Constitution that states only a natural-born citizen can hold that esteemed office. That's because McCain was born at a military station in the Panama Canal Zone in 1936, where his father was stationed as a U.S. Navy officer. His campaign now has former Solicitor General Theodore Olson putting together a legal analysis on the matter. Law professor Sarah Duggan of Catholic University, who has studied the issue extensively, said, quote, "There are powerful arguments that Senator McCain or anyone else in this position is constitutionally qualified, but there is certainly no precedent," end quote. President Bush insists that civil liberties are well protected under U.S. laws on domestic surveillance. During a press conference today, he again prodded Congress to end a stalemate over an intelligence law that expired February 16th. House Democrats have refused the president's demand that the measure, which involves monitoring the communications of alleged terrorists, including immunity from lawsuits for phone companies. Bush also defended his free trade policy, saying that aggressive free trade is good for the national economy. Pakistani police have arrested three Islamic militants for the 2002 murder of seven Christians belonging to the Organization for Justice and Peace, a charity run jointly by Catholics and Protestants. The suspects are said to have confessed, but Karachi police have not yet confirmed that news. At the time of the murders, local press and some public security officials had said that they were caused by infighting in the local Christian community over real estate. Peter Jacob, executive secretary of the Catholic Church's National Commission for Justice and Peace, said that the victims victims' families were not properly compensated for their loss. As a result of the murders, the sense of insecurity that followed, and the lack of government protection, the group had to cease operations. And now your fascinating fact for the day. There are only four words in the English language that end in D-O-U-S. They are tremendous, horrendous, stupendous, and hazardous. For Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now, Dr. Jay Budziszewski, professor of government and philosophy at the University of Texas. And he's the author of a number of books, Written on the Heart, The Case for Natural Law, The Revenge of Conscience, Politics and the Fall of Man. And the focus of our discussion today, although these are all related topics, what we can't not know. Dr. Budziszewski, thank you. Nice to have you with me.
It's great to be with you, too.
Well, I don't know if you want to begin with this question, but I'm going to start here. And if you want to back up, get a running start, that's fine.
Sure.
The things we cannot not know, the things we can't not know, are things which many modern men and women claim they don't know.
That's right.
They claim they don't know that some things are right and some things are wrong. They claim they don't know that these things are designed in some way into us, or at least our capacity to recognize them are designed into us. They claim that these moral motions are products of our upbringing, our herd instinct, or whatever. But they don't ground what we would call natural law. They don't ground that in God or in design. It's maybe, at best, a product of evolutionary adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
So, why do you think these are things we can't not know, when in fact a lot of people around us claim they don't know?
Well, you know, if you the interesting thing is, even when people say, "Oh, I didn't do anything wrong," and they've, let's say, stolen, they've slept with their neighbor's wife, they've killed, had an abortion, something like this. They behave in ways that can't be explained.
Mm-hmm.
If you just assume that they're morally ignorant, that they know nothing about what is right or what is wrong. There are often telltale signs of guilt. People will make excuses. They'll spend enormous amounts of energy defending themselves, justifying themselves, making excuses even when no one is accusing. I think that these are telltale signs of a guilty conscience. It's an empirical question. Is it possible not to have a conscience or to lose your knowledge of the moral basics? I think that you can lose your knowledge of the moral details, but I don't think that you can lose your knowledge of the moral basics. And the proof is in the pudding. The hypothesis that even when we say, "Oh, I didn't know that was wrong," that we behave as though we did and have a guilty conscience is pretty good evidence that, in fact, that's exactly, you know, what it was. If we're behaving like it, it's because it's true. We did know, and we do have a guilty conscience somewhere deep down. What we really know, it doesn't square with what we tell ourselves we know.
So this knowledge, then, is somehow evaded. It's repressed or pushed under.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure, I tell myself I don't know what I really do know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now, do we know these things because they're wired into us? Are these things innate?
Yeah, I wouldn't use that expression.
Okay.
Innate. If it was hardwired. If the knowledge was innate in the sense that you mean, then we would have all of this knowledge as soon as we popped out of the womb, and we plainly don't. we don't have any conceptual knowledge when we pop out of the womb. We have to develop the capacity to think and to understand in that way. Just like the baby when he's born doesn't know that if two things are equal to a third thing, then they're equal to each other. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know some basics of arithmetic like that. And yet, we recognize that when you reach the age of reason, when you see that equals added to equals are equal, we realize that that's not just because your arithmetic teachers told you that. No, you can see for yourself that this is true. So even though it isn't innate in the sense that you know it coming out of the womb, it is something that it's not possible for the normal mind not to recognize as true. And I think that that is the case with the basics of right and wrong, too. Like, I shouldn't gratuitously harm my neighbor. I shouldn't deliberately take innocent human life. I should not take what rightly belongs to another against his reasonable will. I should be faithful to my wife. I should treat my parents with respect. I think we all really know these basics.
Now, you spent, if I recall correctly, you spent a number of years as an atheist. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So what were you saying to yourself during those atheistic years about these things which you can't not know?
Well, I did tell myself that I didn't know that there was a God.
Mm-hmm.
I drew some of the conclusions. If there was no lawgiver, I reasoned that there could be no law.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't think of a way to prove moral basics such as I shouldn't gratuitously harm my neighbor, and so I thought that they had no rational no foundation. If I couldn't prove them, they really weren't true. And what I called good and evil was just a human construct, something that we made up for ourselves from time to time. You keep going that way, and you begin to lose your grip not only on God,
right.
not
yeah.
only on good and evil, but even on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I was very much influenced by materialism. I didn't think that I had free will, personal responsibility. If I'm just something that's jerked around by electrical and chemical impulses, then do I even have a self at all?
Yeah.
You begin losing confidence in the reality of persons.
That's right.
There's less and less in the end that you can think coherently about. That was the condition that I was in. One of the reasons that I'm so interested in self-deception is that after recovering from that,
mm-hmm.
by the grace of God, I mean, I didn't work my way out. I had an awful lot of help. But after escaping from that, in retrospect, I realized, during all those years, it wasn't really true that I didn't know that there was a right and a wrong, and that certain concrete things were in fact right and others were wrong. I did know, but I told myself that I didn't, and so I became very interested in self-deception. How was it even possible for me to know something at one level,
mm-hmm.
but tell myself something else at another level? When I looked around myself, I saw that this was not just a personal problem. An awful lot of people seem to have difficulties like that. In fact, the whole society about some moral issues seems to have difficulties like that. We have difficulties like that notoriously in the sexual realm.
Mm-hmm.
We have difficulties like that in the realm of almost everything connected these days with life and death. And we have difficulties these days connected with God. People seem to be clueless, but they act in ways that suggest that they really know much more than they're admitting to themselves that they know, and they feel guilty when they violate it. So in that way my own experience of years of self-deception spurred me in the years afterward to try to understand how self-deception works.
Did you have an epiphany? Was it an application of, some fundamental logic?
You mean how did I escape?
Yes. I grant that it was the grace of God,
mm-hmm.
but I'm curious how that was mediated to you.
Well, okay. No, I didn't simply reason my way out of it.
Okay.
And I think that the fact that that wasn't how I got out of it is one of the bits of grace here too.
Mm.
The reason that I'd gotten into this big problem is because of intellectual pride. And so it was a mercy to me that God chose a way of rescuing me that didn't give me any grounds for pride. It didn't give me anything to puff myself up about,
yes.
You know, concerning my intellect. What happened was this. I began to have, you might call it an intuition or a perception, that my own condition was objectively evil, that it was,
yeah.
that it was
okay.
wicked. Now, there are a couple of things about this. I don't mean I felt that way. It wasn't a feeling. It was more like a recognition in the mind. I couldn't explain it. I didn't know why I should call myself. It was like a dawning feeling, you know, a little bit one day, stronger the next day, but not really a feeling, more knowledge. It's as though you walked out of the door one day and you began to see, all these years I've been telling myself the sky is red, and, you know, it looks kind of bluish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the blueness of it becomes more and more apparent. Finally, you know, you're going to come to the conclusion, well, maybe I wasn't really looking at it. Maybe it's been blue all along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, that was the conclusion that I came to. I still didn't really understand what was going on. But it was to the point of certainty. There was something that was not right. There was something that was objectively evil about my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there, here was a piece of reasoning. If there was something that was evil, then there had to be something that was good.
Yes.
That the evil was the ruination of.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the only way that you can get something that's bad is by taking a good thing.
Right.
And ruining it. God didn't create evil. The darkness in the corner is because the light doesn't reach there. It's not because there's some opposite form of radiation, anti-light, or that there's another sun that broadcasts black instead of light. And it's the same thing with good and evil. Evil is not a positive thing in its own right. It's rather something missing or something gone wrong in something that by nature is good. So that meant that there was a good and an evil. Well, if there was a good and an evil, then that meant that I'd been so wrong for so long about so many things,
mm-hmm.
that almost anything could be true. That sort of, shall I say, broke through my mental sensors.
Yeah.
It shattered the walls of pride that had prevented me from thinking clearly. I went back and I began to re-examine the Christian faith that I had abandoned many mm-hmm. years earlier. And again, the question, was there an epiphany, you said. Well, there was no moment when suddenly I said, it's all true, I believe.
Right.
But there did come a day when it dawned on me that for some time now, I had in fact been believing again. And I hadn't noticed.
Hmm.
But now I did. And so I drew the conclusions. I said, okay. If this is really true, if I'm sure of this, then I'm going to have to do what that implies. I'm going to have to obey God. I'm going to have to return to church and so forth. This was difficult for me for several years for the reason that I mentioned. It didn't flatter my intellectual pride.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even as for all the fuzziness of the story that I've just told you. Even that, I wasn't able to tell for several years. I couldn't rationally reconstruct
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what had been going on in me or what had been going through. But I think that was part of the mercy God had, God had to shatter my intellectual pride.
Mm.
Now, there was something that came before even this, and I'll admit this also. Even before that first dawning perception
of
that my own
evil.
Condition was evil.
Yes.
There had been a day, you know, sometimes people say, well, I reached the bottom and then I turned to
right.
I turned to Jesus.
Right.
You know, I was a drunk and I woke up in the gutter one day and I turned to Jesus.
Right.
Found myself in prison and I turned to Jesus. Well, when I hit the bottom, in a different way, finding that I didn't believe in anything whatsoever, no, I didn't turn to God. Being at the bottom and being miserable about it merely made my intellectual pride even stronger.
Hmm.
That was not a motive to turn back. I just convinced myself I was one of the tough ones who could believe nothing and still live. But one day I will say I was so desperately unhappy that I did sort of relapse for a moment. I prayed. I said, okay, if you are real, well, you can have me. But I don't believe you're real. I think I'm talking to the bricks on the wall. And if you are real, you're going to have to show me because I can't tell anymore. And there was no epiphany. There was no angel choir singing. The ceiling didn't open and reveal heaven. So I thought, okay, I was right. He wasn't there. But it was in the weeks after that this perception that my own condition was desperately wrong came over me. And I think that it was an answer to that prayer.
Yeah. No, looking back on it, I can see why you would conclude that. Let me ask you a question before. I have to take a break, but I'll ask you this question now, and then after the break, I'll come back and give you a chance. This has to do with the inner life of academics. Especially those who work in fields like philosophy of mind, who don't believe that there is a stable self.
Yeah.
Who don't believe in anything. And I wonder, how does one continue to work and actually propose things and strive to get ahead if, in fact, there's no belief in a substantial self, that there's an I there?
Yes.
You know? So I'm going to leave that with you. I've got to take a break, come back, and give you a chance to answer that question for me. My guest is Dr. Jay Budziszewski. He is the author of What We Can't Not Know, A Guide, which is our primary focus today. But he's written in this field, for instance, Written on the Heart, The Case for Natural Law, The Revenge of Conscience, Politics and the Fall of Man. And we're going to continue conversation. Our number is 1-877-573-7825.
Do you have someone special making his or her first communion this year? Whether the person is a child or an adult, Lent and Easter is the most holy time of the year. G.A. Fuchs and Matea Church Supply have a tremendous supply of communion, RCIA, and Easter gifts. Whether it's a beautiful rosary or a complete communion set, we have it all. G.A. Fuchs and Matea Church Supply can provide you with veils, gloves, ties, or a beautiful communion dress. We have a huge selection of books, devotionals, and your favorite patron saint statues. G.A. Fuchs at 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights, or Matea Church Supply at 3762 Ford Road in Garden City. That's where you'll find all your Lenten and Easter needs. Remember, that's G.A. Fuchs on Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights and Matea Church Supply on Ford Road in Garden City. You can speak to one of our professional salespeople by calling toll-free at 1-800-345-4694. And we look forward to seeing you in this wonderful Lenten season.
The Ave Maria CD Library continues to grow. To complement Father Ricardo's 17 CD set on the rite of Christian initiation for adults, we've repackaged his 8 CD series on the Ten Commandments. The 3-volume RCIA series is $125, and the Ten Commandments set is $68. The MP3 CDs are $70 and $30, respectively. All editions of Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor is In, and Heart, Mind, and Strength are also available. All single talks and programs are on high-quality CDs and are $8.50 each. To place your order for one of these talks or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506. 734-930-4506 or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Thank you. And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Jay Budziszewski. He is the author of What We Can't Not Know, A Guide. And before the break, I asked you how it is, because it sounds to me as though you've lived through this. And so I'm curious. I've had bouts of nihilism over the years myself. But I'm wondering how it is that if you conclude that there is no enduring self, that there's no substantial self, that there's that one is just the product of the electrochemical show between the ears. How do you propose hypotheses? How do you do work? How do you strive to get ahead? It would seem to me that one would despair. It'd be pretty demotivating.
Well, despair is one problem. Many people stave off despair by certain, one might say, psychological tricks. You compartmentalize your life.
Okay.
You may believe, as a matter of theory, that nothing has any meaning.
Yes.
You know, but often in the family compartment of your life, or the getting ahead professionally part of your life, what can I get published part of your life, you act as though things do have a meaning, and that all of these things are worthwhile goals worthy of pursuit. You may tell yourself, well, it's all arbitrary that I, you know, as a matter of theory, that I prefer this goal to this goal, or that this has meaning to me. But that ought to make the meaning meaningless. But one just tries to seal it off, put the theory in a bottle. Yeah. It just becomes something that you theorize about, and it's another one of the ways that it's something that you talk about in a part of your life let me start that sentence over.
Okay.
I may act as though publishing matters, as though the esteem of my colleagues matters, as though finding out something and telling it to other people so that we can say that we've learned something and we built knowledge matters. And yet the thing that I'm telling them implies that there can be no knowledge, because there is nothing really there to have the knowledge.
Right. Right. So such a person who is, as you just described, is a person who one would say is not very well integrated.
Yes,
you know,
that's a mild way of putting it. the way we live, the way we understand ourselves, the way we understand what the world is, the way we understand what kinds of things exist, do minds exist, do meanings exist,
right.
Does God exist, are right and wrong real properties of actions, or are they myths? Those things don't hold together. They don't form one story. Now, in some ways, I have to say, a life that doesn't hang together like this, there is something to the idea, because, you know, since the fall, since we broke away from God, an awful lot of brokenness has entered the world, and that is simply a fact. Our desires and our passions no longer perfectly obey our intellects, okay? So those things have fallen apart. They don't hang together.
Right.
Because I don't acknowledge God as the author of my story, and me as the main character, my story doesn't even make sense to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, there is no big story. Everybody gets the big story wrong. Okay, that is how it feels if you break away from God. That is an accurate description of what it is like. Is that the ultimate reality of it? No.
No.
Because there is a God. But is that how you experience reality in a fragmentary way if you deny God? Of course it is. Of course it is. If you tell yourself that you don't have a self, it's not surprising that your experience of your projects should break up. You're yanked this way and that way, and you haven't any reason to say that your projects, your commitments this week should be the same as they are another week, because your commitments really aren't in your control, are they? Or that's what you tell yourself.
Right.
But I'll at least give the postmodernists and the nihilists, like I was myself previously, I'll at least give them credit for this. It's the basic premise of the idea that there's no God, no meaning is wrong, but that is what life feels like That is what it's like on the inside of that of yourself after you've cut yourself off from all of the sources of truth.
Right, right, right. And the key here is that would you say that the key is that this I know sounds crazy to many, but the so-called insight that there is no meaning can't be lived consistently.
Well, no. Even to say, of course it can't. Even to say there is no meaning
right.
is to claim meaning to the sentence by which I just expressed that.
Yeah.
And if we think that it's terribly important to understand that there is no meaning, well, then we're treating it as meaningful.
Yes, that's right.
to spread this message to the world.
Yeah.
So when you go around saying, in postmodernist language, there is no grand meta-narrative, or as I paraphrased it, no one gets the big story right. What you're doing, in effect, is saying there is a big story.
Yeah.
The big story is that no one gets the big story right, except for us few who know that the big story is that no one gets the big story right.
It does become quite absurd. My guest, Dr. Jay Budziszewski, we're going to your calls now. The number is 1-877-573-7825. Let's go to Colfax, California. Denise is there awaiting us, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Good to have you, Denise.
Hi, thank you. Professor Budziszewski is my favorite guest of yours, Al.
Well, thank you.
Professor, I first found out about you. I ran into your book, How to Stay Christian in College.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I had realized that I had lost my faith in college, and I was, I guess, kind of taking baby steps back toward Christianity. And so I read the book thinking, now where did I go wrong? What went wrong in my own schooling? So you have just helped me so much.
I'm
and
so glad.
Like you, I went back to the Catholic Church, or I returned to the Catholic Church. But my question today for you is, we have a candidate running for president that seems to be epitomizing a denial of the natural law or the moral law. I've read some transcripts of his congressional record, and he denies that he says he hasn't found a universal principle.
Who do you mean?
That phrase, universal principle.
No, to whom are you referring?
Which candidate? If it's okay to name political candidates on the show.
No, you can name it. Our nonprofit status means we cannot endorse any particular candidates.
Okay.
And I won't endorse either, but I can comment on this.
Okay, well, it is Barack Obama.
Okay.
And he says that he has not found a universal principle that would indicate abortion is wrong, partial birth abortion would be wrong, or to justify the...
Oh, yeah, I can suggest one time. He might try the principle, it is wrong to deliberately take innocent human life. Or to put it another way, it's wrong to murder. That seems pretty elementary, right? I can't believe that if we asked the gentleman, do you not believe that it is a universal principle that we should not murder? Oh, well, he'd say, well, of course he knows that. Isn't it a reasonable paraphrase of that principle to say we should never deliberately take innocent human life? Sure. Well, this is deliberate, isn't it? It's a taking, isn't it? The unborn child is human. It's not a dolphin growing in there or a monkey. It is alive. This is not dead tissue. And it's innocent. What has it done? I can't imagine him denying, you know, if you really put him into the corner. So it seems to me that this is an example of where I was in my life before. I knew things better than I admitted to myself and to other people that I knew them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Well, Denise is not with us at the moment.
But okay.
What about he come back and say, well, I mean, there are such things as justifiable homicides.
Well, all right. You might kill in self-defense, for instance?
Right.
All right. What I said is war theory.
Sure.
All right. But you notice that we distinguish those things from murder. We say, okay,
right.
If murder is deliberately taking innocent human life, my intention, if I'm defending myself against you while you're trying to kill me, and in the course of the struggle, you die. My intention was not to kill you. I was not willing that as an end of protecting, as an end in itself. I want you to be dead, or even as a means to an end. I was using force to protect myself. I was trying to keep you from doing this. You died. Okay. My act has not satisfied the elements of the definition of murder. The same is true in just war theory. The just war theory doesn't say, here are some conditions that have to be satisfied, and if these conditions are satisfied, then you may murder. What it says is, here are some conditions that are satisfied, and if these are conditions are satisfied, it's fair to say that you're not, in fact, deliberately taking innocent human life.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't murdering. You know, just as we wouldn't call it murder to take, you know, to take the life of a chicken, because murder is deliberately taking innocent human life, you wouldn't say that capital punishment, whatever your views on capital punishment, you wouldn't say that it's the deliberate taking of an innocent human life, right?
Right.
If you run into somebody in traffic,
the presumption is that the person is guilty.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you run into somebody in a traffic accident, it's not your fault. Or even if it was your fault, but you weren't trying to kill him. All right, it wasn't a deliberate taking of an innocent human life. Right. That's not murder. So not all killing is murder.
That's right.
I would reply like that. Something like abortion, destruction of human embryos and stem cell research. You are deliberately doing this. This is the human form that you're destroying.
Yes. My guest, Dr. Jay Budziszewski. We're talking about his book, What We Can't Not Know. Which I love. I love the double negative. Our number is 1-877-573-7825. Continue with your calls on the other side of the break.
Difficult economic times.
Families faced with an increasingly secular and perverse culture.
Men enslaved to addictions of alcohol, lust, pleasure.
Men unsure of how to exercise their God-given authority.
Put Out into the Deep 6 will bring together anointed speakers from across the country, each addressing a critical area of contemporary men's needs. Our time together closes with Mass, celebrated by Cardinal Adam Maida, with Bishop Danielle Flores, the homilist.
Make your plans now to attend Put Out into the Deep 6, Saturday, April 12th. Full details and registration are at christschosen.com. Tickets are $40, including lunch. High school and college men are $25. U of D's Callahan Hall, April 12th. Make your plans now. Bring a brother in Christ.
Sister Sarah, look what I got. A new dog.
Hey, he's really cute. What's his name? Where'd you get him?
His name is Chico, and this little guy is real smart. Ain't that right, Chico?
Neat. Hey, does he do any tricks?
Does he ever? He can count by barking. You want to see?
I sure do.
Okay, Chico, listen up. What time does Notes from Above start on Sunday afternoon?
Tom, we air at 4:30 on Sunday, not 4. I mean, it's cool that Chico can bark up to 4, but it's not the right answer. The right answer is 4:30 on Sunday afternoon.
But sister, I can't have him bark up to 30. I'd lose count. Now, maybe I can get him to tell everyone when we go on the air on Wednesday and Saturday nights.
That's a lot of barking, Tom. The dog's cute, but no offense, kind of a dumb trick.
Okay, when does Notes from Above air on Wednesday and Saturday night?
Oh, give it up, Louie. Chico, you're such a little cutie pie.
Well, he's a smart cutie pie. Now, how many barks was that, Chico? I lost count. Okay, let's start again. Bark to 9.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. The number here is 1-877-573-7825. My guest, Dr. Jay Budziszewski. He's the author of What We Can't Not Know. And we're taking your calls. Again, just briefly summarize, there are, many ways you might consider moral common sense things. For instance, awareness that some things are right, some things are wrong, that there is meaning and purpose, that there is a design, in some type of design to life. How is it that though these things at one time in our history appeared quite clear to the vast majority of our fellow men, no longer appear that way? In fact, there are people regularly who deny that there is a basis for honesty, morality, chastity, justice, that our aspirations for love, meaning, significance are really unfulfillable. How did we get to that point? One of the questions before us. But let's continue to your calls right now. And with me right now, continuing in California, Grace is with us, listening on Immaculate Heart. Nice to have you, Grace.
Hello. Yes, I've been listening to your guest, and it seems like that I haven't called the program before, and I would like your guest comment on what seems to be as old as the hills in Genesis, when after Cain killed Abel, God asked Cain, "Where is your brother?" And Cain immediately said, "How should I know?" Seemed to be his most natural tendency to lie to somebody who he had to know, couldn't help but know that he was lying. And that, I mean...
Yeah, Dr. Budziszewski?
Yeah, and I think it's true. Often when we lie, it's truly irrational, even from a selfish point of view, because you're right. The other party knows knows that we're lying. When we lie to God, He knows that we're lying. It's crazy to imagine that we can deceive Him. When we lie to ourselves, that's true too. You can push something back out of present awareness. You can take steps to try to not remember things too often, to try to hold things down, and yet you have to know at some level that you're doing it, because you're not two persons, you're one person.
Mm-hmm.
So at some level, you know, the attempt to lie to yourself is almost as futile as the attempt to lie to God. You have to cover up your lie to yourself with another lie to yourself, and you have to cover that one up with still a third one, cover that one up with a fourth one, just like when you were a kid and you were caught with your hand in the, you know, with some of the cookies missing from the jar, and you lied to your parents, and you had to tell many lies to cover up that lie. It is irrational, and yet we go on attempting to do it. And consequently, we experience the results of that irrationality. We have chosen that something shall be askew, that something shall be irrational, and the consequences of that flow through our minds. They ripple, they spread, they ramify, and throw us further and further out of sync. In a way, you know, when you lie to yourself, or if you lie to God, you're doing something stupid. If you lie to yourself, you're trying to make yourself stupid, and you get what you want. You succeed in making yourself stupid, but often we succeed better than we had intended to.
Mm. Grace, thanks for the call. Let's go to Red Lion, Pennsylvania, where Warren is listening on the internet. You're up, Warren.
Dr. Budziszewski, it's good to speak with you again. I had a Plato's Politics class that you taught, I think it was way back in 1982 or 1983.
Oh my golly! I was only barely recovered from nihilism back then.
Oh, yeah. Well, that brings me to the point of my question. In the class, I was not the best student. I'll be honest with you. This might remind you who I am. I fell asleep, and you came up to the side of the class one day and began to teach class standing next to me while I slept.
I remember.
And I woke up, and I was a little embarrassed, but it taught me a good lesson. My question is this. Toward the end of that class, you brought up, there were several discussions on Plato and the Republic that we were reading, mm-hmm. and you brought up an interesting point that kind of blew me away, because you said that there has to be a truth to the foundation of all thinking. And you said that you believed that the truth in the universe was Jesus Christ and God. And at least I think that's what you said. It's been a long
okay,
time.
I must have already recovered.
And that kind of blew me away because of the liberal secularism that had set in at the University of Texas at Austin so deeply, even at that point, that it was contrary to most of the trends of thought or threads of thinking that were present there. And that really surprised me. But is that what you said, or could you clarify that for me?
Well, yeah, I may have said something like that. I know that often, you know, there's many teachers on the first day of class. You may be mistaken about when I said it. It's more likely that I would have said that on the first day of class, in just telling who I am, something about myself, and that you linked it in your mind with something else that I said about the necessity of a foundation of truth in Plato. And that would be a reasonable linkage to make. The two things are certainly connected. I probably wouldn't have said them on the same day. I do often say on the first day something about who I am, where I come from intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
And if it seems appropriate, and sometimes in response to a student question, I may indicate, well, yes, as a matter of fact, the most important thing in my life is Jesus Christ, and I believe that the triune God is he's the creator of the universe, but that means that he is the source of all of the meaning that it contains, all the truth that it contains, all the good that it contains. He's the foundation. So that does come up sometimes.
Yeah, I'm an Anglo-Catholic myself, so I'm beginning to really deeply appreciate what you said more and more. And person in my congregation that I know, he has taken several classes at a college here in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Where they've used your text.
Oh, really? Well, good.
I have had several conversations about that.
You know, it's very nice to hear from you.
And I would like everyone else to have a chance to speak with you as well. Yeah. Thank you, and God bless you.
Warren, I'm just curious, what school are they using those texts?
I want to say it could be Shippensburg University.
Okay.
If not, it might be, I don't want to say Millersburg because he lives over in Carroll County, Maryland.
Okay.
So it's somewhere a little bit west.
Well, they get here and there.
Yeah.
They get here and there. I get letters occasionally from faculty at other institutions that are using, you know, this book or that book of mine in one course or another. Phil Johnson, I know, used to use my book when he taught at University of California, Berkeley Law School, and you know things. So it gets around, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm glad that it has I have a chance to reach some students that I can't just reach in my own classes.
Warren, thanks for the call. Let's go to John in Kennewick, Washington. John, good to have you here.
I just kind of caught the show a little bit after it started, and I was listening to the doctor. I've got a son who's just about 22, and he kind of sounds like my son is going through the same struggle that the doctor went through, where he sort of believes he leads a good life. He calls himself an agnostic, has a deep love and sort of a respect for the church, and like I said, he leads a good life. He says that he'd like to believe, but he just you can't prove it to him. And his concern is, he says, Dad, are you saying that I will be condemned to hell because I don't accept what the church teaches or accept Christianity? So I'm kind of curious what advice I can give him to maybe come closer to the truth and also explain maybe in a better way what the church itself says about his possibility for salvation should he remain an agnostic.
Well, one thing that helps, I think, is to try to understand some of the different reasons why people wander into that particular desert. There's a mixture of several different kinds of motives, and sometimes one has the upper hand in one person and another motive has the upper hand in another. One is sometimes simple intellectual confusion. One may say, well, I can't prove it. Well, that's if by proof you mean something to which it is impossible to doubt, something to which no objection can be made, well, you know, there's nothing that can be proven in that sense. And in fact, proofs depend on some things that can't be proven. Don't we do geometry that way? There have to be some axioms that we accept as first principles. Morality is like that too. The principle that good is to be done and evil is to be avoided can't be proved from still deeper premises. It's the deepest one. You've got to start with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to God, though, we can make some very good arguments, and there's a whole history of these arguments. There's a very good book. It's by Peter Kreft and Ronald Tacelli. Kreft is Kreeft. It's called Handbook of Christian Apologetics. In it, he goes through a number of the arguments for the existence of God in everyday language. Oftentimes, people who say, well, you can't prove it, haven't actually considered the arguments. So they really aren't in a position to say whether you can prove it. So one possible, if the problem is simply intellectual confusion, one possible starting point is to start there and say, you know, why don't you read this? Let's talk about it. Now, another obstacle sometimes is not intellectual confusion, but that there is some sin in our life. This was one of my problems back in those days. There's some sin in your life that you don't want to acknowledge. You're not comfortable being around God anymore. It is more convenient. You want to live your life a different way than He instructs. And so it is convenient for you to try to convince yourself that He doesn't exist.
Right.
That's a tough one to deal with, right? Because argumentation isn't going to get through here.
Right.
How would you answer the sort of the second part? I mean, I'm a fairly faithful Catholic, but I know of people that are good people and can be presented with all those arguments. In fact, I have the Peter Kreft book, but that even after going through that, it's not that they're necessarily leading a bad or immoral life, but they go throughout their life and they still, for whatever reason, can't come to the truth as much as they desire maybe to come to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
His concern is, well, what does the church say to those people as far as salvation?
Well, I think one thing that it says is, if you call yourself an agnostic, that says that you don't know.
Right.
And you're the reason that you're giving why you don't know is that it can't be proven. Okay, tell me, do you know that you can't know?
Right.
Are you sure that you can't be sure? You know, you'd have to know an awful lot about God and about what God, about revelation and whether there is any or isn't any and how God discloses himself and about what's possible to human reason and what's not possible to human reason. You'd have to know an awful lot to know that you can't know that.
Right.
So on the face of it, it's not a very rational position. Now, not only is it intellectually not very rational, in a practical sense, it's not very rational either, because you can say, well, I don't know, I'm neutral. Maybe you don't know, but there's no such thing as neutrality. You're either living as though there is no God, or you're living as though there is a God. One of the challenges that the Holy Father has made in several of his books and speeches and so forth has been to say to those of our generation, our generations, I should say, there are several of us of our generations living at the same time, is if you can't be sure, try living as though there is a God.
Right.
Pray. Live the moral life the best that you can. Confess your sins. Go to church. And you may find that you are drawing closer to Him and that you come to believe Him.
Indeed. Well, Dr. Budziszewski, thanks so much. Always good talking with you, and let everybody know your books are available in our online bookstore. Thank you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed being on the program.
Sundays during the Lenten season, Ave Maria Radio will be broadcasting a Lenten radio retreat. Bishops from across the country, including the Most Reverend Daniel Flores, Auxiliary Bishop of Detroit, will be giving homilies in a prepared question and answer segment about a Lenten theme. This Lenten radio retreat will be heard Sunday mornings at 9:30 after the Mass, right here on Ave Maria Radio.
From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages. For more information about advertising or to get your free copy, go to CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. Get better results when you advertise. That's CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. CatholicBusinessPages.com is brought to you this week by National Insurance Advisors. We're more than plans. We are solutions. We can help formulate an insurance plan that is affordable and works for you in the time of need. We are the health insurance specialists you can trust. Individual insurance, life insurance policies, long-term care, and dental plans. Whatever your insurance needs, we are here to help you. Call Nicole today at 586-838-8900. That's 586-838-8900. CatholicBusinessPages.com, your best choice. Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
Join me, Father Thomas J. Loya, in Light of the East on this station.
This week, we will see how the Lenten practices and the teachings of the Church not only change our lives personally, but change the world. Light of the East on this station.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me on today's broadcast. We've got tonight, Catholic Answers following me right on radio. But tonight, we've got EWTN. Make sure you're viewing there at 8 o'clock Eastern Time for Life on the Rock. That's 8 o'clock tonight, EWTN. And yesterday's poll question at AveMariaRadio.net, how many magazine subscriptions does your household currently have? None. 29%, 1, 20%, 2, 20%, 3 to 5, 25%, 6 to 10, 6%, more than 10, 0%. Today's poll question, we don't have it yet. But if you go to AveMariaRadio.net, you'll be able to find out. Plus, you can follow up on the conversation I had with Dr. Jay Budziszewski, and his book's available in the online bookstore. I'll be with you tomorrow, Lord willing, for another edition of what we call Cresta in the Afternoon. AveMariaRadio.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineer, Kara Coulter. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To order your copy of this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506. Another year has come and gone, and whether you like it or not, Uncle Sam requires you to make an accounting. If you dread the thought of it, perhaps it's time to give Myler and Zipka a call. They communicate in a friendly and understandable manner, and they work with you to legally minimize your tax bill and identify ways to reduce future taxes. They offer flexible tax services that are tailored to accommodate your preference for how involved you're in the filing process. And if you prefer a hands-on approach, they have an electronic organizer you can use to greatly reduce their fee. They also provide electronic filing to increase the efficiency of processing your return. Eliminate the nagging feeling that you paid more taxes than you need to and experience the convenience of working with Myler and Zipka. Call Dave Myler or Ken Zipka today at 734-930-5500 and they'll help make this year's filing experience pleasant. Myler and Zipka, integrity, excellent value, and people dedicated to a long-term relationship. Call 734-930-5500. Do you have someone special making his or her first communion this year? Whether the person is a child or an adult, Lent and Easter is the most holy time of the year. G.A. Fuchs and Matea Church Supply have a tremendous supply of communion, RCIA, and Easter gifts. Whether it's a beautiful rosary or a complete communion set, we have it all. G.A. Fuchs and Matea Church Supply can provide you with veils, gloves, ties, or a beautiful communion dress. We have a huge selection of books, devotionals, and your favorite patron saint statues. G.A. Fuchs at 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison.